What's up, Ed?
Bob, what's going on?
Everything good.
I think the last time I saw you was at your you had this community get together at your training site at Trinity. You had a lot of the community showing up for you guys. A lot of armed, responsible individuals. A lot of cool people I met at that event. It's an interesting place. It's a bastion of self-reliance and dependency in an ocean of a lot of resistance to that, I guess, is what I can say. But before we go into that whole aspect of what you're doing and some of the amazing work you guys are doing out there, tell us a little bit about yourself for our audience that doesn't know you. What got you started off on this journey of preparation, Bob?
So I actually I'm a contractor by trade, right? And I wanted to increase business years ago. And everybody's like, you got to go to a golf outing, man. And I'm like, fuck, I don't golf. So I was like, yeah, I'll go. And, you know, of course I suck and it was horrendous. And the guys are like, what else you do? I said, well, I play guitar. And he's like, no, man, you shoot guns? I said, no. He goes, we'll take you shooting. Go get a gun license. Never saw those guys again.
Wow.
So I got my gun license. Now in New York at the time, this is prior to the Bruin decision in 22. This is quite a few years ago.
Yeah.
And you could get a gun permit, but it's only for target and hunting. That's what they considered it.
Okay.
So you were able to keep your gun in your home, go to the range, come home. That's it. So I realized that I know nothing. I'm not former military. I'm not former LE. I'm, you know, a guy who wanted to get into this culture and really, you know, dive deep. So a friend of mine just roundabout was like, you know, you should hook up with this guy, Joe Fasanella. He had a company called Condition Gray and they do tactical training and all that. And I said, oh, I'll give him a call. So I called him up and I'm like, hey man, what's going on? I said, you know, I heard you train people. I just got a pistol license. And he's like, who you with? Because at the time he only worked with, you know, LE and military guys.
Yeah.
I'm like, Superior, you know, it's my flooring company. He's like, oh, you're a citizen? He goes, you're a civilian? I say it. He goes, all right, just come down this day and we'll check it out. So I trained with him that day and really realized that, you know, this is incredible.
Yeah.
Very empowering. And I've always like done different forms of, you know, fighting and martial arts and, you know, dabbled in a lot of different things for self-reliance. You know, I had a challenging childhood. You know, there was a lot of, you know, violence and there was some substance abuse and there were things that made me
unsafe,
you know, unsafe and angry. You know, that was like, you know, a lot of a deep part of me wanted to always be able to protect myself and feel safe.
What,
you know,
that's, what ethnic background are you, dude?
Take a guess. I'm Colombian and Italian. My father's from Colombia and my mother's Italian.
All of the Catholic guilt right there.
It's deep in me. absolutely.
Yeah, no, it's you know, it's a history doesn't repeat itself, but it oftentimes rhymes. And I know a little bit about this type of unsafe nature and some of the cultural elements of Latin America and, you know, this Italian stripe that is pretty much kind of the same thing, just like they have way better food out there. But I get the aspect that some of these upbringings give some of us, even though I grew up in a Catholic background as well. Not a lot of weaponry in my background. You know, my mom carried a knife, but that's about it. And growing up, I've always had this feeling that I was unsafe, you know, and that not even the people that were supposedly in charge of my safety would do anything. So I had to take responsibility for myself, you know, which is apparently, even in our day and age, you want to talk about the biggest minority in the United States. It's not a skin color. It's people that decide to take up arms in their own defense. That's the biggest minority in the United States right now.
Absolutely.
And doing so responsibly, you know.
Well, that's it. Yeah. Doing it responsibly and letting them know it's okay. You could take the power. The largest, I think, demographic coming up in the last, I'd say, 2 years is women.
Yeah.
I mean, our class is starting to fill up with women, and they're reaching out to us, and they're saying, you know, I want to empower myself. You know, I don't want to be a victim.
You mentioned this whole aspect of not being prior military or not being any sort of cop or anything like that.
I'm a regular guy.
Yeah. I was a regular guy when I went to shoot at the range with a bunch of military, active duty military guys. And I could tell you those motherfuckers can shoot some of them. So I've always taken the stance like, you know, a military trained shooter is good enough, which is probably not the safest to be around as far as an instructor. And I know a lot of cops who can shoot at the side of a barn. It is something that sometimes some of us, you know, I'm from the civilian world. I do nothing cool anymore. Well, a few cool things every now and then, but I'm nobody. I have no intention or want to be back into that role, which, you know, God bless those people. And I respect that job. I did it for years. It has a shelf life. But a lot of people discount themselves or view this as something so far from them that they can't achieve because they have, I don't know. They have a certain programming in their head about what it takes to be able to manipulate a firearm or for who these firearms are. I mean, we are infected by Hollywood. We're infected by social media and just these weird programming and opinions that, you know what? There's no way in hell I can operate this firearm. It's too much for me. Or this shouldn't be in my household. It's too dangerous.
Right.
You know, and slowly but surely, some of these illusions start kind of like dematerializing in front of you. Now, we have the saying in Mexico, guns are stupid in the hands of the dangerous, which is the ignorance around them. Like, we think guns are going to go off by themselves, or we think having a gun, and it's something that, you know, statistically is true. You know, if you have a gun, your odds of using it go up, obviously. And if some of these things happen around you, you know, but what people don't take into account is if you don't have one and, you know, something happens.
What?
Now you have to live with inaction instead of the actions you took, which I think is a way heavier toll on your soul.
Yeah. Especially with family and people you love and people you want to protect. And, you know.
It's interesting you mentioned this whole demographic of women raising now. Historically and culturally and as a role, you know, you and me, we're people that have families. And, you know, when I think about possessing a firearm, both on my person and in my house, kind of the first thing that pops into my mind isn't home defense, because fuck the house, you know.
Right.
It's family defense, you know.
Absolutely.
Like when you got started in this whole training community while you were training, like, as a civilian, which is, you know, again, I respect that because it's like, that's scary. It's a scary thing to start on your own. Like, what were you focusing on as far as your own personal development at the beginning? Like, what would you recommend people figure out for themselves at the start?
Competency. That was the most important thing. Safety and competency. I always equated it, especially as I got further down the rabbit hole and I really got into my training. I flew different areas in the country to meet with certain people that were recommended to me as, you know, really top-notch trainers. But I really wanted it to be, if I'm going to take the responsibility of having this, I wanted to equate it. I mean, I do equate it to driving. So you're driving and the dude in front of you stops short. Are you going to be like, hold on a minute, I need to remove my foot off the gas and press it on the pedal. I was going to say, press it on the pedal. No, you're going to be like, it's on, instantaneous, boom, boom, you know, and I should be that competent with my firearm. I should absolutely be able to, you know, under duress, under stress, and that's part of the big part that we train is, you know, real life scenarios. You want to be able to be competent, you know, efficient and safe, you know, and being able to, you know, carry yourself in a way and protect yourself and the people you love at the best of your ability under stress. You know, what were
some of the first like firearms and equipment you had or you bought for yourself that then you ended up discarding? Because that's an interesting question for people because, you know, nobody starts, you know, I used to run these Acker holsters that were pieces of shit,
but
like for you, like when you started, like what were some of those mistakes that you can, that you wish you can kind of like go back and say, like, you know what, this was not the best course of action.
No, there were some shitty holes. There's a lot of, you know, the funny thing is you go to anybody who's really in this and been in this community, you'll see just, I have bins of holster
bins,
you know, slings, all kinds of stuff. And that, you know, I mean, listen, I think part of it is too, when you start training, then you start realizing what works and what doesn't work.
Yeah.
This holster, this belt, this sling, it looked good on YouTube, and now it's, you know, it's a piece of shit. And then I realize I have to upgrade my stuff. You know, I mean, I did a lot of research when I was looking for my first firearm, and my first pistol was the CZP-10C. It's very similar to a Glock 19, like very similar.
Yeah,
I think they just much lifted the whole, you know. Yeah. And I loved it. I thought it was a great gun. And then I started picking up other guns because people were like, oh, you got to get this, man. You got to try this. And I got it. And I was like, what am I doing? I can't wait to sell this. You know, I made a lot of mistakes in the beginning. But then, you know, that's how you learn.
Yeah.
You know, I was able to really kind of process what I actually needed and, you know, what fit my body too. I mean, I'm 5'3".
Yeah.
Like I'm like 12-year-old on steroids, you know. It's like I'm a little guy. So I really wanted to be careful with who I spoke to, because somebody was like, you know, 6'5" and, you know, this giant jack dude. And he's like, you got to get this. I'm like, well, your hands are the size of my leg.
Yeah.
You know, that's not going to fit me well. And that's what I really tell people is, you know.
Yeah. You have to figure out what fits you. I mean, you could see a giant former Delta operator doing cartwheels and shooting with one hand, but that's not necessarily, there's a poisonous aspect to emulation. I've noticed.
Absolutely.
So it's not for everybody, I guess. Like when you got started, as far as disciplines go, I've always, on my end, you know, I've always tried to look for disciplined people who are specialized instead of going to a place that tries to show you everything, you know, like beware of the instructors that are, you know, everything instructors. At the beginning of this, just focus specifically on, you know, being proficient with my firearm, repetition, clearing failures, trying to figure out not only the workings of the firearm itself, but also be able to, you know, course correct as I'm moving and shooting. But oblivious was I that, you know, there's conditioning that needs to happen before that. There's dry fire that could be done before that. There's a medical management training that should be focused on before any of this. Safety, ballistics, all of these things are just, it's never ending.
It's so integrated. And, you know, and I love what you said before, because there is no one-stop shop. I mean, one guy who knows... I'm always leery of those guys. Like if I want to focus, I go to, you know, a USPSA, you know, grandmaster to like learn how to, you know, competitive shooting, man, is a phenomenal tool.
Yes.
To really get good. I don't care what you say. I hear a ton of guys talk shit about that, you know, in the,
but then they'll never compete.
They'll never compete. And those guys are, I've seen some, I mean, I'm a mediocre shooter.
Yeah.
I am. I'm a good instructor, but I'm a mediocre. And I've seen guys that, you know, lights out, but they can't teach, you know, or, you know, so it really, it depends. But like you said, I like to specialize, and that's what we do. Like, I'm a big fan of bringing in guys, you know, like, you know, you want to learn, you know, if a student says, you know, I really want to get into whatever, you know, CQB or CQC, I want to bring in a guy who's an expert in that, because I'm not. So I bring people into Trinity. You know, and that's actually how we met you, you know, like being an expert in non-permissive environments. I don't know anybody, you know, better than you. You know, I was like, oh, that's the guy. So it was excited when we first, I was excited. And so was, you know, Joe and the team. Everybody wanted, couldn't wait to get you in there, because you bring in people that bring the expertise with them. Because I, you know, I'm, like you said, man, I'm leery of guys who are like, oh, no, man, I do it all. Just show up. I'll fucking teach you everything.
Yeah.
No, you won't, man. Well, someone's going to suffer. You might be good at this, but doesn't mean you're going to be great. And I've seen it. I've been to classes where I'm like,
yeah,
this dude's not, he's not preaching the right thing here. You know,
when was the shift between you trying to figure out proficiency on your own to then like seeing like, hey, this is a path that I kind of figured out for myself. But also, I see a need here. Like, when did that happen? When did that shift happen for you?
When I was on my own. I was just, you know, watching videos and trying to go to the range and try to figure it out. And I realized that I was not consistent. And that was the thing. It was consistency. Mm-hmm. I didn't have the grip. I didn't, you know, sight picture was off. I mean, there was a lot of things working against me. And then when I started training and got the right instruction, I was like, oh. And then it was reinforcing with dry fire. That was huge. You know, that there is, you know, they have that 10,000 hours, you know, you've heard that, you know, to become really good at something, you have to put in the
mastery.
Yeah. And, you know, I'm still, you know, there's, you know, I'm still, I work at it. I'm perpetually a student. I am master of none. I really am. I'm very honest about that. And that I'm constantly trying to improve myself. And, you know, it's funny because I was with my my combatives guy. We also integrated combatives into it. You know, I think you know him, Ivan Perdomo.
Yeah, yeah.
You know him, right?
A great guy. Yeah, great instructor.
He is phenomenal. And he's that unicorn, man. You know, he's that guy. You know, when I met him and he started integrating, you know, open hand combatives with blade, with firearms into that. And I'm just like, you know, it's one of those things that's very humbling. You know, you think, okay, you know, I got some skills under my belt. I know nothing. First time I met him, I was like, wow, man, you opened up my eyes, yeah. You know? And it's another tool to become proficient with. I train, I'm constantly training, you know, and I want to just be better.
Yeah.
And that's dry fire, you know, going back to firearms, dry fire is essential, man. And reinforcing, you're able to self-correct if you already have the solid base. Like some people who try to correct, but they're deficient in the basic skills are not, they're reinforcing bad habits.
Yeah. I know a few amazing people that are like top tier warriors. Like, I guess right. You could say, one of them, a friend of mine who I can't name because he's a ninja, he's still active somewhere out there. An amazing right. shooter. He told me about proficiency being a moving target. Like it's always moving. And he said that after I went to the range with him and I put on my new prescription glasses and I was off when I put them on. And he said, like, what's going on? I was like, yeah, I don't know. Like, I think, you know, he'll blame your equipment, you know, always.
Right.
But he told me, and it's a true thing. I mean, he's around my age, and he's about to check out of his active role. But proficiency is a moving target because the skill set and the environment is moving, and also your body is moving through it. You know, we get older, we get stronger. He told me about this process he went through where he was getting. You know, he was taking some of these supplements and the trend and all that to try and get a few more years out of it, out of his body. And all of that changed, you know, body mass changed the way he moved and some of the stuff he could do lightly and fat and in a very proficient and fast way in some of the competition shooting he used to do, like that started going off the wayside. So he had to like constantly adjust. Right.
Right.
And you can't help but think about the same phenomenon happens to anybody who is a young idiot who is just running around and gunning, or that has this mindset of like training themselves up to be this proficient individual.
Right.
And then you're changing diapers and then your priorities change.
Life, man. Life takes you.
Yeah. Yeah. So I've seen people talk about this constant training. Mm-hmm. And people don't understand why that is. It's because we ourselves are also kind of moving targets in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
You know, this past year, we kind of restructured and retooled a lot of the training we do around some aspects of mesh communication devices, drone technology. We've been teaching some of the Ukrainian fighters some of these aspects for a few years now, medical management, how the golden hour is gone. Like now it's, people are going to have to stay a bit longer in theater for medical management. Like everything's changing now. Body armor, the availability of body armor and all at a, like a global scale. And also the fact that, you know, these things are being now homemade in places.
Yeah.
and identifying 3D printed guns or pen guns that are now out there and are pretty common. It's a moving target. Proficiency and preparedness and the responsibility it takes is a moving target. You're never going to be 100%. And, you know,
and it's perishable.
Yeah.
It's perishable, man. I see it time and time again with myself, you know, and I'm getting older, you know, I'm a bit older than you. And, I remember being at a steel shoot, you know, those steel competitions,
yeah.
Knockdown. And I was shitting the bed. I'm like, what the fuck is going on? And I remember this guy leans into me, man, and he's right in my ear. And he's like, my man, give it up. It's time to upgrade. You can't see shit. Get a red dot. I was like, what? He was right. I was like, you know, it was one of those, I have to accept that I'm getting older. My eyesight wasn't that great, you know, and you know, your body changes, you know, I'm a 56-year-old guy, you know, like it's, I gotta like, you know, yeah. Things have changed, like the way I train, you know, and, even, you know, that's why I'm actually, it just serendipitously worked that I started, you know, training combatives with Ivan. He's in charge of our combatives portion of Trinity, but also like his whole philosophy was more working with my body. You know, he integrates several styles of martial arts to be the most efficient one part of it, like going through, it's like, I call it old guy fighting. You know, I'm not going to stand toe to toe with a fucking 20-year-old guy, man. That's, you know, how much gas do I tank, you know?
Yeah.
So to being able to, you know, fight smarter, not harder kind of, you know, philosophy. And yeah, and just, I had to adapt, you know, changes, you know, types of guns that I carry. You know, people always ask me, you know, what's the best, you know, concealed carry? Cause that's our thing right now in New York, you know, concealed carry. So what's the best one? And I was like, you know, it really depends on you. Like, even though I'm a little guy, I hate, you know, little guns.
Yeah.
Like the 65, you know, X Mac, it's so small and it's snappy. I don't like it. Just doesn't feel good in my hands. Though I did get the Legion, you know, ooh man, that was very, that steel frame makes all the difference.
Yeah. I mean, for me, like people look at me and what I carry and every now and then when I can, I travel a lot and like, I like those 38s, man. And I carried, you know, semi-autos my whole career. But it just makes sense for the lifestyle I have. And for the ability to travel with and not have it be flagged in a certain state or something like that. And it just makes sense for that. And I train with it and I, you know, it's not the best option, but it is a pretty good option. It fits a lot of roles, at least for me.
Right. It's for you.
Yeah. But, yeah, I wish I could have like a 17 Glock 17 cut down into a 19 size handle, you know, maybe. I like 9mm a lot. I don't like impact rounds. I've had horrible experiences with those, but that is me. And you come to some of these solutions and options, not through this whole aspect that some people have where it's like, it works for them. So I'm going to use the same thing.
Yeah.
That's emulation. That's going to be poisonous. Right.
Deadly, man.
Or people that buy guns as an amulet, you know, just because you own a gun doesn't make you armed and dangerous. Just like owning a plane doesn't make you a pilot. You know, this aspect of the amulet aspect of firearms and how like, hey, I'll just have a gun and that's going to keep me.
I love that analogy, the amulet, because it's so true. It's, you know, I have guys come, cause you know, we're teaching these classes and you got to remember we're in New York. So gun culture in the South, Pennsylvania, Carolinas, you know, it's everybody hunts, everybody has a gun. You could go to your grandpa and he'll give you your first gun. That's not the culture in New York.
Yeah.
So, you know, now it's a new thing. And the hardest thing to convince people is, you know, you got to practice with this.
Yes.
Like I, you know, it's an 18-hour course you got to get to get your concealed carry. So it's two steps. You apply through NYPD and then you take the 18-hour course. It's 16 classroom, 2-hour live fire. So during that, a lot of it that I teach is the law. You know, when can you use it? When can't, you know, people think, you know, they don't realize that we're in a duty to retreat state. So what that means is there's stand your ground in some states, but in New York, it's duty to retreat. So what does that mean? So I have a door right here, right? So a guy comes in. No, I'm sorry. And then if I'm hanging out by the door and a guy's to my right and he comes in and he has a firearm and I feel my life is in danger and I defend myself, it could go not in my way Because they'll say in court, hey, man, there was a door there. And in New York, you have a duty. You could have left. Why did you shoot him? You know, and the looks on people's faces when I say that, they're like, you got to be kidding me. I was like, think about it. There's cameras everywhere, man.
Yeah.
Everywhere. You know, like you, if you choose to, you know, go this route, you have to be able to stand up and defend yourself in court. And that's a fucking eye opener for people, man. They're like,
it's called responsibility. Okay. And people don't want it. They don't and want it.
I think walk out.
Yeah.
They're like, man, this ain't for me. I'm like, yeah, you're right. You know, it is. It's a big response. That's why you train. That's why you work on safety. You know, you should be taking Stop the Bleed. You have to, you know, if you make holes, you should learn how to plug holes. Yeah. And there's a lot of aspects to this culture.
Yeah, and you know, every now and then you'll get, no, shoot him in the face. Better be carried by, you know.
Yeah, carried by
all this. And I hear all of that. Yeah. The implications of shooting somebody and killing somebody are big. In the United States, legally, the psychology of it, you might do this in front of family members and create a scar that is going to be with them for the rest of their lives. But not doing anything could have even greater consequences.
Right.
So in the middle of that, there is the very hard aspect of personal responsibility and work and training, which... sedentary people who just want to call the police and step back and have everything done for them. I mean, I understand, which is the majority of the population. It's an option. When you decided to start this project, which to me, when you guys reached out and I started going out there and doing some of these classes, for me was like mind blowing. The mind blowing aspect of it was, I, through other people and through just close calls of people landing in New York with a firearm that was legal, but, you know, then got some issues. And the fact that they were using some of the pictures from our Instagram account to pass certain legislation in New York around pointed objects and these things, I found it like amazing that there was this training space out there. Close to the city, and had a team of capable people, a range, like all of this was there. And I told people from the training community nationally about this place, and they were like, where? They couldn't believe that there was such a thing there. So how does this even, how do you even pull this off? How do you even start this?
So yeah, it's a great question. So when I was with Joe, training with him, and he was bringing me up, I went deep down the rabbit hole. I was like, this is for me. I want to, you know, get deep into it. And we became friends. And then Joe's background is he is former NYPD, former counterterrorism, and he just retired from the Air Marshals. So he's got a lot of connections in the industry. And he's like, you know what, man, it's gonna be the guy who shows up and opens up a training place in New York. You know, we're in Staten Island. We're like in the belly of the beast. He's like, those, you know, get our balls, man. Let's roll the dice. Let's do this. And he convinced me. I was like, you know what? Let's make it happen. And, you know, there was a lot of mistakes we made in the beginning. You know, we also wanted to open have an FFL and open a gun store. And I learned a valuable lesson that just because the ATF says you're cool, that doesn't mean zoning in the commercials means you're cool. Yeah. So we took like all this square footage, like we're going to be fucking crushing it. And, you know, the ATF was great. And then when I got, you know, in front of the city council and the zoning board, they're like, absolutely not.
Huh.
I was like, oh. we just took all the big place. So it was a little nerve wracking. There was a lot of, you know, a lot of people checking us out. I mean, we're still, you know, I mean, if you think about it, there were a couple of hundred CCW holders. It was in New York, you know, prior to Bruin. Now I think in New York there's 71,000, and we've certified over 7,000 of them.
Wow!
You know, a lot of people have come through our doors, and you got eyes on you. You know,
When you say you have eyes on you, and like when I went out there for your your outdoor event that you had, you know. You mentioned that, you know, some of the publicity was lifted. when you say, like, act like, who are these? Like, I'm not talking about names, but like, who are these people? Are they people that are just afraid of guns, afraid of you, afraid of anybody?
Yeah, they don't know. Like, you know, and we're very pro LE, obviously. And we, you know, we're friends with the community. So they had to get to know us. And that was the main thing. You know, you got to, like I said, because it's New York, a lot of people think, you know, they see some toothless redneck in the South, you ain't going to get my guns, you know, and they have this like weird, like distorted view of gun ownership and gun people. And so in New York, I'm saying, listen, I'm a dad, man. You know, I got kids. I'm a regular guy. I'm you. And I say that all the time. And that's kind of my thing. I'm not some, you know, tier one guy, you know, some operator. I'm you. I'm just like you. And I wanted to take on the responsibility and being able to, you know, protect myself, my family, and be proficient at something. You know, and it's a lot of discipline. And that's another part of who I am, that I love discipline, man. That's, you know, that's the juice that fills my cup. And, you know, it was a lot. I mean, people were like, you know, in our area, you're only allowed to, we don't do a live fire in Staten Island.
Yeah.
You can't do that. We have what's called NLT guns. They're like, you know, they shoot, we used to be shoot UTM, but the ATF put a kibosh on that. So, you know, we have these force-on-force rounds that we train people with. And we would constantly have the cops called on us because they're like, these guys are shooting live fire rounds. I hear gunshots going off. There's no gunfire. So it was almost in the beginning, nightly visits from, you know, the local precinct. They would show up and I'm like, and, you know, everybody on my staff is former LE or active duty police and military. And, you know, they'll come in and they're like, yeah, sorry guys, but they called again.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay. You know, so it was weird because I wanted, you know, in a business sense, you want to put, you know, you want to be loud and proud, these giant posters in front. We like kind of kept it small in the beginning because, you know, we want to, you know, build with a slow, we want to build with the culture, you know, because it is all, it's brand, it's new. So we want to kind of grow with it. And when it becomes a little bit more acceptable, I mean, think about it. There's 70,000 people now that have their seat just in New York, the whole state. I think it's 200,000 was the last thing I read. You know, if there were a problem, you'd know.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
In your opinion and like what you saw, like who's protesting this? Who's against it?
Nobody
ignorant
people. Like I'm not gonna say left, right, you know, any of that shit.
I've seen both sides being freaked out by capability. So
you got it. Capability is the freaky part, and it's honestly it's ignorance. It's lack of education. It's lack of, you know, I don't know anything about NASCAR. So for me to shit on it, I would need a guy to go, hey man, this is, you know, it's part of our, you know, I need somebody to explain it to me, which I had done a few years ago. I had a relative that was down south and explained to me, you know, the calls, like, what the fuck are you people doing watching a car? You know, so if you don't know, you don't know. You know, so my thing is to educate and to say, you know, listen, this is a very viable, you know, option for you to take care of yourself, you know, and you know, self-reliance is for me is everything, you know. And
who were the, like, who's showing up for these for these the first classes? Like, are you seeing, you know, people in the community who are like trying to stop by and like, what is this about? Like, who's showing up for this for the opening?
In the beginning, it was obviously a lot of guys in the community. I mean, word got out. If you were in. You were in the know, you were coming down. And you know, and we had even people coming from parts of the country that were like, I didn't think it was real. Other people were bullshitting me. I wanted to like come and put my on it. Like, you guys really doing this in New York? They're looking around like, you know.
It's an island in and of itself of like there's no other options out there.
Yeah.
You know, because it's that frowned upon, I guess. The aspect of being in such a place with such restrictions and also that culture that it's pretty much politically against this type of self-reliance. Is there a sense of secrecy in the environment as people showing up there? Are people really worried about their privacy there? Like, talk to us about
in the beginning.
Yeah.
It's getting, I mean, it's opening up. It's definitely opening up. It's they're talking about it on the news, on mainstream news, you know, not a lot, but they'll mention it. And in the beginning, it was like I was telling you earlier, man, it's like, you know, like you're dealing drugs. People are like, I heard you can get, help me get a gun. I'm like, you don't have to whisper. It's legal. You're good now, you know? And we still, there's still a very large part of people that like will call me. And it's like, can I really get a firearm in New York? I live in Brooklyn. And I was like, yeah, man, you can, as long as you don't have, you know, any, you know, felonies, nor, you know, no arrest record, you live clean. And yeah, you just have to go through the proper procedure, you know? And like, oh, no way. I didn't think it was a thing. I was like, yeah, it's a thing. And you know, it's funny because people are very motivated by fear. You know, when the political climate changes in New York or something happens, everybody's like, I got to, you know.
That's a good question. Like, so, you know, we just saw a political shift in New York in a way, you know, and it's been the center of the eye, I guess.
Yep.
Whatever opposition there is to the current administration in the White House, I think has found a face, I guess, there. Mm-hmm. What has that done for you guys? Do you feel when stuff like this happens politically, do you feel it on your end? Is it do you see people either rushing to or maybe staying away from this responsibility?
You know, it's funny because we don't have a gun store, but friends of mine who do, who have told me like when the cult, like a Democratic government, you know, a Democratic president is very good for gun sales because they're going to come and take my guns. I got to load up before they take them. And which is interesting because you would think the opposite, but they tell me, the guys who, friends of mine who have gun stores are like, you know, Republicans, usually people get lax. They're like, all right, we're cool for a little while.
Yeah.
So gun sales kind of teeter. But, you know, depending on the political, the climate, like, you know, we have a new mayor now. And I haven't seen a lot of it in the training aspect, but as far as CCW, it's through the roof.
Yeah. Yeah.
Through the roof is a lot.
And when, like, okay, like, and from your personal experience and seeing the community, because you're in touch with this community there, specifically the community that's trying to take responsibility for themselves.
Yeah.
Fear, is it just fear of the guns being taken away, or is it fear of this criminality kind of like upticking again? And
that's the big one. The right now, not the guns being taken away, but the criminality. Because of, I think, his political views and where he's coming from, he is very laxed on crime. That's the impression. I mean, listen, you know, the guy in office 2 months, not even. So we don't, you know, I don't know what's going to come of it. But the overall impression everyone's getting and the word on the street, so to speak, is, you know, crime's going to go through the roof.
What are people worried about? Home invasions, robberies, armed robbery. These are the worries.
Those are the worries. I mean, you know, we have cashless bail in New York, and they were fighting that for a while. And they were trying to get rid of it, and I think it was on its way out. And then he's an advocate for it.
Yeah.
So those types of, you know, like not criminalizing, you know, the
revolving door politics.
Exactly. It's got everybody a little on edge, you know, a little on edge, and they're not sure how that's going to play out. So they're motivated now to, you know,
have something with them,
protect themselves. Yeah. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
When somebody walks into Trinity and, you know, people that have nothing to do with any of this, a dad who, you know, did well in business and he has a few kids at home and he didn't serve in the military, you know, doesn't know anything about firearms except what he learned on Call of Duty. He shows up to Trinity, you know, what does it look like for them? What options do you have for somebody like that? Who is, you know, ground floor zero. He just shows up there.
I love those guys because that was me.
Yeah. That's me. All of us. All of us didn't know. Yeah.
You know, I came in and I said, you know, guns weren't a thing in my family either because A, I'm from New York, and B, my father was drafted to Vietnam. His mother died when he was like 18, and a month later shipped him off. And then he's there. He fights. He was in 67 to 69, you know, he was in the shit, you know, and, came back, 2 Purple Hearts, 1 Bronze Medal of Honor. You know, he was a war hero, and they wouldn't make him a citizen. So he was like, fuck this, fuck these guys. And he was very, so my mother eventually in the 90s was like, stop it, just go get, become a fucking citizen. It's ridiculous now. So he did. But at the time, so it wasn't, he wasn't pro-gun. You know, it was, you know, that was not part of my culture.
Yeah.
So when I see a guy come in like that, you know, and I'm like, hey man, I feel you, you know, like why, you know, the first thing I ask is, why are you here? Like, you know, what are you looking to achieve? You know, like what is your goal? What are you feeling that makes you want to, you know, enter this world, so to speak, you know, and my responsibility is to take him on a competency and a safety, you know, first and foremost safety, but also talking about mindset, you know, like really, what is your mindset? What are you looking for? What are you looking to get out of this? And why are you here? You know, and be inviting, be warm, you know, like these are people, man. People are people. I just want to be, you know, I'm like, you know, yeah, I'm in the gun game, but I'm peace loving granola, man. Let's embrace the community. I want, you know, the same thing for everybody, you know, prosperity, peace, you know, and safety for your family. And the confidence that, and I teach this to my girls. I have three girls and a boy, and I want all my girls to be confident, man. I want them to be able to carry themselves. They all know how to fight. They know how to shoot. You know, I want them to, I give them a baseline, you know, but when they hit 16, it's, you know, they do what they want to do. And hopefully they come back to training, you know, because I kind of, you know, but it's, I want everybody to feel.
Yeah.
And that's what I want to emphasize to people is that you want to feel that, okay, you know, I am, you know, I'm capable.
Yeah.
We want to turn out capable, you know, confident people. And that's our whole mission. That's our whole mission statement. We're here for you. I always say that. It sounds hokey, but it's true. I'm here for you, man. It was you.
When somebody shows up with fear as part of their, like, hey, yeah, why do you want to have a gun? I'm afraid.
Mm-hmm.
That always, like, makes me pause a bit. You know, I don't want to sound like Yoda, but no, anger leads to fear, fear leads to hate, all of these things. Very negative base and a very negative emotion to have at the beginning. And I think for me as an instructor and as somebody who's, you know, prepared people for horrible, horrible possibilities, I'm always trying to educate their fear. You know, it's one thing to be just fearful. It's another thing to be aware of what the risks are in the environment, mm-hmm. you know? We run into this, people run into this, state where it's like they're watching the news. They listen to horror stories about home invasions or carjackings or whatever it might be. And they start putting themselves in that mindset.
Mm-hmm.
And if your solution to your fear is a gun, then everything that manifests that fear or even has the inkling of that fear is going to get the bullets. And that is not a good thing.
Not a good thing.
Not a good thing. But in what you avoid usually is what you need. And again, the coming back to the whole aspect of discipline and training and learning about the law and reading, like every now and then I get people are, hey, Ed, like give me some training tips. And I give them like six book recommendations and they're like, hey, dude, why you don't like to read? You know, those that don't learn from history are destined to repeat it, I guess. And in a lot of ways, I take the experiences of the past and try to figure out how it applies to the future or a possible event on my end. So I've always tried to and look for places that have that kind of same mindset. Trinity definitely has that mindset. There's many people there that have different backgrounds, different solutions to things. And you go all the way from the mindset, legal aspect of things to, hey, my gun doesn't function or I don't have a gun and I have to use my hands. That's a pretty wide variety of options for people. When I was there and I got to see some of the crowd that was like the local crowd there kind of showing up, I saw a lot of formerly individuals. I saw some people who had absolutely no background in that, but they were obviously capable and armed and people that were preparing themselves for an eventuality of some sort. That part of the country, and this is, again, I don't know, but it seems like that part of the country is traumatized by events that had that have happened in its past. And I'm not talking just about 9/11. I'm talking about, you know, the 70s in New York and the 80s. And you know, New York was a wild place.
Yeah, man. Yeah. And my upbringing, you know, that's where I grew up.
Yeah.
You know, we had, I grew up in a part of Queens, you know, Elmhurst, Jackson Heights, you know, where all Colombians come from in that part of, you know, New York is very, if you know, Puerto Ricans in the Bronx, Dominicans uptown, you know, I mean, it's like, it's depending on where you are, but you know, yeah, there was a lot of, I mean, Times Square prior to Giuliani was a dark and shady place, man, you know,
yeah.
But there was there was a cool vibe to that. Like we were like, I'm a New York guy, balls to bones, man. That's who I am. You know, like, I'm very proud of my city, and that's, you know, also part of what motivates me. Cause why do I have to, you know, go down south or somewhere to, you know, get that kind of training, you know, but yeah, that gritty part of New York. Yeah. There was crime. It's been higher and lower throughout, you know, 70s, 80s and today, you know, it's been up and down, you know, depending on, you know, what's going on culturally, what's going on economically. There's a lot of, you know, things going on. But you know, yeah, I think there's definitely some trauma. There's a lot of, you know, and I've seen and experienced things that a lot of people in other parts of the country, you know, haven't. I mean, I didn't grow up wealthy, you know, like, so it was a lot of, you know, the Latin Kings were big in my neighborhood, you know, and I was just telling Ivan a story last night. I had dinner with him and we were talking about, you know, it was bat day at Shea Stadium. And guess what they tuned me up with? those little mini bats.
Yeah.
It kicked the shit out of me with that, you know, and yeah, but that was part of like where I grew up. You know, it's yeah. You know, in other parts, when you talk to people, they're like, "Are you kidding me? Yeah. That was the thing." Like, yeah, man.
I've been in rooms with like very high level people, operators and shit like that, and everybody's like, "Yeah, where were you?" Like, "Oh, I deployed to Iraq and Afghanistan and all that." And then I raised my hand, like, "I operated in Mexico. I grew up in Tijuana." And then look at me, you know. There is a cool aspect of growing up in a place like that, and Tijuana is not pacified at all yet. we just had two people found hanging from a bridge yesterday. What I find in places like that, as far as what they produce, as far as individuals, you know, our baseline normal is abnormal in general. Like, we just did a class in Switzerland, and I got to meet and talk to some of the people from their homicide bureau. And yeah, they see some shit, you know,
yeah.
But it is nowhere near the baseline that I come from. And, you know, I realize, at least on my end, that where I'm from and some of the trauma that caused me, when I say trauma, I don't mean it in the look at me, my trauma. I mean, my normal is completely batshit crazy.
Right.
Like what I consider normal or what I consider abnormal is very different. And New York has its own weird amorphous normal, if I can say that. Like, speaking to people from that area, you know, there's always this mindset in the back of their heads that they could be targeted for a terrorist attack, because that is real. The city, that whole area has a giant target on its back because of what it represents, because of all the people living there, because I don't know about people envying your freedoms as we speak about how restrictive that place is. But I get it though. I've been to New York. I don't think I could live there, but I understand why people choose to. I mean, there's amazing things there. And it definitely has an energy and a charm to it. And I get it. You know, somebody from a giant city like Tijuana, I get the aspect of it being moving and changing and the access that all the people coming in and out of a city like that give you. But I also realize, you know, from a country that is very restricted with firearms and how averse it is for people to get their own responsibility. Mexico has one of the most strict gun laws in the world. And also it's getting even worse now with the current to the left presidency we're kind of suffering through.
Yeah.
You, And I always kind of look at the aspects of training and civilian access to training that the United States has as a one. I come from a perspective of we're a country that doesn't have anything like it. So even when I went to Trinity and you were talking about how restrictive it was for you, it's still completely wild to me that you even have that access to this type of stuff. So for people kind of hearing this and not realizing how big of a gift it is that you can go and buy a gun and train with it and keep it and be proficient with it legally and not have to worry about your own back. There are people out there in the world that, buy a sandwich bag full of bullets and a gun that they don't even know if it works or not. And that's the only thing standing between them and somebody walking into their house and taking two of their daughters.
Yeah.
Yes, guns are scary. If you've never handled one, if you never trained with one, if you don't have the discipline to be proficient with it, if you've never seeked out true training, and if you never failed with it, you never had any sort of failure to feed and all that. It's a very unknown, scary thing.
Right.
Sadly, it is one of those things that is now part of the baseline normal as far as the skills that you should probably learn,
Right.
You should probably learn. Not even, I every now and then I get people who are like, Ed, I'm a pacifist. I was like, wow, what a privilege people like myself have given you to be a pacifist. you find people like that, or like, just call the police. Cool. The cops, most parts of the world respond to the after event, not the actual event.
They're there to clean up.
And as being somebody that's shown up for a bunch of after parties, I could tell you the thing that I saw destroy the most amount of souls was the "I wish I could have done something" response.
It's chills, man. I'm like, oh,
it's true. I mean, it's true.
I know.
And like the whole aspect, like everything you want, what you avoid, that's where your solution is usually.
Yeah.
Trinity provides that. And again, the whole aspect of the wild aspect of it being in the center of this very restrictive place, or at least this place where, we want the powers that be want to blame inanimate objects on violence, because a gun is an inanimate object and it doesn't go off unless it was made by a certain company, which I don't want to burn. It doesn't go off by itself, it doesn't go off by itself. When people are in your facility, and they're training and they're kind of like in this environment, and again, this, I don't know, again, you guys have constructed this perfect place where you kind of shelter from the outside, although you have this weird facsimile of a city on the inside, which is, I love, this place that kind of simulates an urban environment. Talk to us about that. Like, what led you guys to construct this, for me, it's like this very reminiscent of our old school shoot houses that we used to have. But like, what are you guys looking for when you construct this controlled reality in your facility?
It's urban because that's who we are. I'm not going to make the environment something that we're not a part of. It would be disingenuous for me to, put like desert, scenery and that's not who we are. We're an urban, we are gritty urban people. And that's the type of training you should do. You should be training in and out of cars, in and around cars. You should be training in your environment, and training knowing, there's a lot of people. There's always a lot of people. There's a lot of activity. It's so for me to bring that urban element into our training, because that's who we are. That's who we're training. There's not a lot of guys flying in from the Midwest to train with us. I'm taking care of my people, regionally where I am, and that's the type of environment we created for them. I want them to, be able to work in an environment that is reminiscent of where you live, and that's for me, that's huge. You want to be able to look around and go like, yeah, man, fuck yeah. We've had government agencies come through and I see all the guys taking pictures,
Yeah, it's,
against 3D walls and stuff, because they're like, this is like, they were not expecting that. You know, they were expecting a more sterile environment. And I said, no, this is where you work. What does this look like?
Yeah.
It looks like downtown Brooklyn. I'm like, exactly. Yeah. That's where you're working. That's where I want you to, you know, that's the environment I want to set up, because that's who we are.
You have, you have this cool space in there, which is also a store, and gear and equipment, and people walk in there, and I mean, I walked in there and I was like, man, what, I'm gonna buy some of this, I guess. When you have a store like that, when you have a place like that, people walk in there, and I noticed this because some people walked in wanting to buy stuff, and you orientate people in what they need specifically. You know, I want to buy this giant medical bag that's the size of a cooler, but I have no idea what any of this fucking does, you know? I'm starting my process in becoming a more responsible citizen. I want to become an asset to the community. I want to become an asset to the people around me, and I want to protect my family, you know? Mm-hmm. What are you going to advise I get? Like, what should be the first things I get? Obviously training, and obviously I should go to medical management and stop the bleed and learn my laws and all of this. But like, what else should I be getting for myself? Like, what else should I be putting in my bag?
Yeah, you know, not only having your IFAC kit for yourself, you know, for when you're shooting, but also for your family. Because the probability is I'm going to need a tourniquet for, you know, a guy in a motorcycle accident, man.
Yeah.
You know,
and then somebody hitting the railing with their leg.
It's hanging off. I can have a tourniquet. I could tourniquet that guy and save his life. And, you know, for me, it always comes back to my family. You know, every one of my cars has a med kit in it. And I've trained, you know, it's a lot of stop the bleed. I mean, I have guys that are, you know, highly, you know, done live tissue training. You know, Ivan has actually. There's a couple of guys that have done like that type of training. But for me, I'm able to, you know, the responsibility making holes, you have to be able to, you should be able to plug holes. So, you know, a basic kit and learn what's in that kit and learn how to use it. You know, take as many. I mean, I've taken a dozen of them and I'm still going to be taking more.
Yeah.
Because it's reinforcing, man. Anything, like anything you do. So I'm a, you know, I have my own personal, I carry a tourniquet with me every day. You know, my pocket dump, so to speak, has, you know, my blades, my firearm.
What tourniquet are you to subscribe to specifically? Like, everybody has their brand.
The original, Cat. The larger, yeah, the Cat.
Yeah.
And, I'm a fan, man. Yeah. I just, you know, I've trained with it the most. I have a couple of mini tees. I'm not good with them yet. You know, I haven't really worked, so I'm not, you know, it's not going
to
save.
Yeah. When it comes to tourniquets, time is of the essence. I mean,
time is of the essence. I don't want to fumble. I've worked with Cat like my whole life. That's kind of what I'm, you know, and it's loaded in all our cars in my kit. In my bag, because, you know, I carry around a bag with me, and that's my go-to. So that's kind of what I stick to, because, and it's, you know, tried and true.
The amount of people out there wanting to buy solutions, you know, that's always like a thing that makes me cry when I see them trying to buy a solution or the latest and greatest. But realistically, some of the tried and true stuff is, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it, you know. I learned on Cats. I did Cats all of my career, and the ones that failed were made in China. So be careful. Mm-hmm. Be careful where you get them, and kind of be sure about the fact that you have
out of China fucking tourniquets.
Yeah, you don't want a windlass snapping at you during, you know, application.
Right.
I've also witnessed this. Again, I'm new to this whole thing. I'm 9 years into my American experience almost. I see people showing up to the gun range in full plate armor, you know,
full kit.
Yeah, full kit. And I'm like, God, even when I was going after people, I mean, sometimes I get sweaty and I leave that armor behind. I'd rather be light and fast. But armor, does armor have a place in the kit room of a responsible civilian? There's legislation around armor as well. Like, can you help us navigate that from the perspective of the people that are coming in training with you?
Yeah. I mean, I think you should. I mean, it's the laws are funky because you can't purchase armor in New York, but if you have it, I think like you're able to get it if you are a range officer. You take a range officer class, you're able to have body armor. And, you know, I keep a soft armor in my car, you know, my carrier in my car. You know, God forbid I have to, you know, put that on. But when I'm training, you know, you train and like how you live.
Yeah.
You know, whether, and I'm big into that, like, you know, like t-shirt and jeans, what I'm wearing now is what I would train in, you know, whether, and that's everything. That's, you know, combatives, that's blade, that's shooting, you know, show up like you live, you know, and that's because I'm not going to be in full kit taking my kids to the mall.
Yeah. another phenomenon that I've seen in the U.S. a lot has been backpack armor. Mm-hmm. Which, you know, my kid goes to school and she knows how to run. She knows what materials around her stop bullets and what materials don't. She knows how to break windows. She knows how to lock pick. She knows a lot of things, that little demon of a girl. I've never given her a set of plate armor to put in her backpack because I think I've never seen that work. Or I've never seen anybody kind of like, hey, my life was saved by this backpack. Right. Where do you kind of fall on this? I mean, I know you get a lot of people that are very concerned that want to have options for their kids. And I get it. I understand that aspect. But, like, what do you think about these options for civilians?
I think I'm in support of like, just an added layer of protection. Is that, you know, you're bulletproof now? No. I don't tell my kids that, you know, if God forbid there's a situation, you know, get out, get away as fast as you can. And, you know, if you're running, it goes on your back if you can and just go. I mean, if it's an added layer of protection that, I mean, cause I can't be there all the time, you know, my thing, I train them, I give them, you know, I put them in front of the best people. I give them the best advice, you know, it's, and you're right. I know what you're saying. Like, I don't want to give them a false sense of like, this is, you're good now.
Yeah. I don't want them to run back and grab a backpack because that's going to keep them safe. No, I want them to be able to
just go. My running is number one.
Realizing that there's a difference between cover and concealment, running, right. Having them have the experience of hearing, you know, and again, this is dark shit, but it is, when people say that, hey, Ed, your kid knowing what an AR-15 going through a 30-round magazine sounds like and then changing the magazine is a dark thing that your kid knows. Kids used to learn hide and seek because they didn't want to get fucking kidnapped and be put on the slave market. That's where hide and seek comes from.
That's interesting. I didn't know that.
That is a lot of the games that we used to play as kids that, you know, some kids are now missing out on because they're on the tablet on playing Roadblocks or whatever. A lot of them had self defense and survival built into these, games. It is dark to show or teach your kids certain things and show them certain things that are in the world. But ignorance is no better.
No,
it's actually not. A bit more evil in my mind to keep them blindfolded to the realities of the world. And again, most people that are out there who have never had need for any of this that have kids in their lives. I mean, I understand we want to keep them safe and we want to keep believing in Santa Claus and. Which is real. If you're listening, kids out there, Santa Claus is real.
Next room, he's putting it.
How do you approach with kids? How do you approach these realities without scaring the fuck out of them?
You're right. For me, you talk about somebody's whys. You know, why do you do it? It's family. I am a dad first and foremost, man. I live for my kids. That's. I get emotional if I get into it, you know, because I'm passionate about my family. But there is a part of me, you know, it's funny because this isn't kind of the mindset of where I'm at, is that I didn't want them to have my childhood. You know, I mean, it was dark and rough. And I give my father a lot of credit because he spent the last 20 years making it up to me. And I love him for that. But I also don't want to coddle to the point. There's no adversity. And therein lies the duality of fucking being a parent is like, I want to be, you know, I don't want them to fucking suffer or have the trauma. But there's a part of trauma that also made me resilient and strong. And you know, you knock me down, coming back up twice as hard. You know, that's how I am raised. So it's difficult. You know, I don't want to coddle them. But in the same respect, there is a dark world. You know, I live in a nice area on Long Island. But that's not the real world.
No.
You know, and I don't want you to have, meaning you, I mean, meaning them.
Yeah.
I don't want you to have this false sense that we're, you know, in this cute little beach community and everything's going, no, man, there's some shit out there. So I think exposing them to, like, they've all come to our classes. You know, we do live fire out in Long Island because we have a giant range. It's fucking tremendous that we're able to do, you know, live fire training, you know, rifle, shotgun, pistol. And they come and they hear, you know, it's almost become like fireworks at this point, you know, hearing, you know, 14, 20 guys, you know, unload magazines, you know, they're training for 8 hours. So it's part of, and I think if you normalize it, and this is the important part, like, you know, it's, I don't want it to be a gun to be a big scary thing. It's just what daddy does. You know, it's what I do. And they also, you know, all of my older kids, you know, learned how to shoot, all of them. I say, you know, I took them to the range. You know, we emphasized safety. Some, you know, if I felt one of them wasn't really ready, wasn't listening, you know, in dry fire or with, you know, just overall gun safety, wasn't time for you yet.
Yeah.
But I made sure that I brought it to them and, you know, exposed them to that. And, you know, listen, I'm not telling you guys to be fearful. I'm not trying to teach you to be paranoid or fearful, but there is an element of the world that is scary and dangerous.
Yeah.
And I want you to be prepared because you may never need it.
Yeah.
You know, if you do, you have the tools and the training to be able to, you know, take care of yourself. It reminded me, there was a shooting, one of the mass shootings. I don't remember if it was Virginia Tech or not, but a lot of the people that survived it froze because they never heard a gun go off before.
Yeah. You don't want that. You don't want that first experience to be
in a fucking classroom or like on the, you know, in some, you know, wherever, man, a mall or some shit.
Yeah. I call it frozen denial.
Froze off.
Because you hear those snaps and it's like, nah, it can't be gunshots. Maybe it's fireworks. This, that, they go into this denial that they're in that unimaginable situation.
Yeah. And I don't want that to be the first time, you know, that they hear that and they freeze. That's not the reaction. Like my mother-in-law just bought a place on the Jersey Shore and there's a gun range close by. And we were on her back deck and I heard, you know, gunfire. And both of my kids stopped and go, that's gunfire. And I'm like, yeah, what's that about? I'm like, and my mother-in-law came out and said, oh, there's a range, an outdoor range a couple blocks away. But they knew immediately. They knew it wasn't fireworks. They could tell the difference.
Yeah.
You know, and exposing them to that and exposing them to, you know, training and safety and, you know, situational awareness, man, is the number one thing you could teach anybody.
Yeah. Yeah.
Situation, like, you know, walking into, you know, like walking in the street like this, that's not how we walk around Manhattan.
Yeah.
You know, my kids know, you know, they don't, cell phone doesn't come out on the subway. It doesn't come out in the street. And when you're walking around, your head's on a swivel. But I said, you know, I'm not telling you guys to be paranoid. I'm telling you to be aware.
Yeah.
If something looks good, listen, instinctually, we have innate and built in us over thousands of years, a sixth sense that something's off.
Yeah.
You can feel that. It's what kept us from, you know, fucking tigers eating us. You know, we have that in us. Listen to that gut.
Yeah.
You know, whenever I've made mistakes, I wasn't listening to my gut, man. You know, and I tell my kids, Adam, if you feel something's off, this is dangerous, this guy, the way he's looking at me, you know, stay out of the reactionary gap, you know, keep distance, keep your eyes on a swivel and get out of there.
Yeah.
Teaching that.
For me, it's like a game. I try and, you know, I said, look at their feet. That'll give you direction. Where are they going? Yeah. And if it's linear direction in a weird place, that means that they have intentions towards you. You know, face a smile, but hands kill. So if you can't see one of their hands, they might have a surprise waiting for you. And face. So I always, with my kid, I always try to face, hands, feet, just to have a good idea of what's going on in the environment. And we play a game with it, you know, like wedding rings, try and spot them. So she's like always scanning for them, like it's C1 or 2 or tattoos and what they mean, you know. In a way, basically gamifying this aspect of reality, which is, you know, people walking around. And also, I always have this game with her where I show her a picture of somebody without any context. And again, she's a kid and she's learning. I don't want to scare her, but, you know, there are evil people in the world. And if you think that evil people in the world are going to look like the burglars in Home Alone, you know, you're going to miss the fair-skinned woman showing up as a facilitator to a human trafficker. Or you're going to miss the kind man just offering you a ride who turns out to be Ted Bundy.
The name I was thinking of, I was like, Ted Bundy was this guy.
I mean,
guy, like, you know.
Show that picture to somebody without any context.
Right.
And just to ask them, like, hey, what do you think about this person? Oh, this is nice. And then you tell them, like, oh, that's responsible for all these murders. There's a lesson there. I mean, when you talk about intuition, and specifically women have way more of that going on. And I don't think it's anything magical or psychic. I think men have a built-in social violent aspect to them. So, you know, direct eye contact means something completely different to men. In a public space, maybe challenging physicality, all that is there. But for women, they don't have that. So it's like they're looking to survive. Their survival instincts are way more tuned in or key. But yeah, they don't get taught to listen to it. You know, they don't get educated to like follow it or hear it. You know, and when trauma visits. And, you know, they there's a tendency to then, you know, everything is bad. So, like, I don't know. For me, like, being a good parent is, and trying to figure out how to not, you know, when we talk about coming from trauma, we're talking about generational fucking curses, I think, in a lot of ways. And, you don't want to pass that along to your kids.
Right.
But some of these curses do have superpowers to them. I mean, I'm... I'm an example of what like a abnormal amount of trauma can do to an individual. I mean, look at where I am. But I don't want that for my kid. So
no.
But I also don't want her to grow up in a bubble. So how do I, you know? And I think my solution has been to help her engage with the world in a very supervised way. You know, she had an event when she was a kid where this homeless person showed up to a restaurant and flipped over some tables, and it was an event.
Wow.
She was with her mom. I wasn't there. And the men that were there didn't act like men. Oof. Right? So that's what happened. And she became very anti-homeless. You know, I mean, how can you blame this little kid? You know,
how do you blame her?
Right? How do you blame her? Very anti homeless. He was like, oh, homeless people near the car, like, what's going on? And eventually, basically, I had to take her to see and meet some of these people who are homeless and ask questions as a volunteer, you know, buy some socks and hand them out. And they became these unknown threats. They turned from that into, hey, that's Armando, and he really is happy about you giving him socks because, you know, they're pretty hard to get. And I think Jordan Peterson says we should be supervising their stupidity closely, I think is the way he refers to it. Yeah, we don't want to put them in a bubble because then they're going to basically repeat the curse, I think, is in a lot of ways is what I've found for on my end as a parent. I'm not done yet, you know. So I'm legit being careful about all of this. You know, our parents walk to school so we can get driven to school maybe, and then a chauffeur shows up for the next generation And then the fourth generation walks to school again. You know, that's usually how it works. I think there's a way out of it. And I think one of the key things that I've realized about all of the people that I admire and humanity in general is the power that an individual taking the responsibility for themselves and their family has. Mm-hmm. I mean, think about that world, Bob. Everybody around you in your community takes responsibility for themselves and their families.
Right.
That's heaven. That's heaven. That's awesome, right there.
Man. It is.
And anybody that freaks out with somebody choosing to show up to Trinity and like say, hey, I need to get ready for something that might happen, but it might never happen. And the fact that I'm learning about it now, actually, my odds of it happening are like even less now because now I know what to avoid.
Right.
You know, that I think that is, you know, that is a very holy work in a lot of ways. I know there's something about the resistance to it that kind of freaks me out. You know, it is like, why would you resist this? Like, why would you resist somebody being able to defend themselves and their family?
That's put it down.
Yeah.
That's why would you, you know, put down something that you would turn to me if shit happened and I was in the room, they'd be like, you gonna do something?
Yeah. You know? I think we lived through COVID, and there were lines at the gun stores with COVID, were people who their whole lives talked about how stupid gun laws were and how everybody should be disarmed and, you know, that nobody should own an AR-15. They were calling you about borrowing a gun. I know this phenomenon happened to many out there.
Oh yeah.
And this whole, again, this aspect of fear. And I think the only antidote to fear is education. And I think you guys are doing God's work out there right now on that end.
That's our gig. You know, I want to educate, and probably the most important thing, you know, like you were saying before, realizing threat indicators and, you know, having situational awareness. That's the best thing I could teach you when you walk in the door. You know, keep your eyes out.
Yeah, software over hardware is what I like to talk about a lot, because you know, the direct ancestor of any action, you know, shooting somebody, is a thought. Right. And if you think that the gun is the solution to all problems, you're the problem. Mm-hmm. And if you think a gun is a solution in and of itself without training and without like putting some time and effort into it, and you're also a threat to the community with that gun.
I tell people all the time, I was like, listen, man, if you're going to buy that and keep it in the safe and hope it works one day, just leave it in the safe.
Yeah.
Call it. It's a paperweight, man. You're going to hurt somebody. You're going to hurt yourself or your family. Just don't do it.
Yeah.
It's, you know, it's not for you. It's not for you. Unless you're going to train with this. I mean, it's almost like I'm talking some people out of it, because, you know, we have these classrooms full of people and I'm like, listen, unless you're going to become competent with this thing, and I mean really competent, you know, pressure tested, you know, and you have to be able to rise to that. Otherwise, it's not for you. It's not for you, because, you know, God forbid you hurt somebody you care about, you know, or you're ignorant. You know, ignorance is poison, man. That's the thing that'll, you know, cause a lot of misery in your life.
Yeah.
Educate yourself.
Yeah.
You know, be smart, be proficient, be competent. That's what we do. Yeah. I can't push that enough. I'm passionate about it. This is definitely something that I believe in wholeheartedly, you know, and because I'm, you know, I'm a regular guy.
End user.
You know,
end
user. Yeah. I'm end user.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
For people that want to find out more about you guys, or people that want to go and train with you guys, where does my search start?
Just go to our website, trinitytrainingcomplex.com. And honestly, my cell phone's on there, man. You know, you have questions? I'm a hands-on guy. You have a question? Call me. Hit me up. Say, you know, I want to get started. Where do I start? What do I do? And, you know, pick my brain, you know, and hopefully they see, you know, a podcast like this and say, oh, you know, I never thought of it that way. You know, like I'm not a gun nut, you know, in a negative sense. I'm a passionate guy who's a family man.
Yeah.
Who wants, you know, I want to be able to protect myself and my family and the people I care about. You know, I want to know. And more importantly, I want to be surrounded by competent people.
Yeah.
I know we're out to dinner, right? And something I'm like, okay, I'm with a good group of people.
Yeah.
You know, which are competent, you know, huge.
Yeah, which is a beautiful after effect of a place like Trinity. I think I remember going there and realizing that, oh, you are the cool guys here in this area. You know, you're the people that want to actually train some of this type of stuff. So if you feel lonely in your need to train, to be proficient, to take responsibility and stuff like that, finding a place like Trinity where you can find your own tribe is pretty cool. You know, I do that all across the country, go to cool places and train with cool people, and I'm never alone and I don't feel unsafe. People are like, hey, Ed, aren't you worried? Everywhere I go, there's about 25, 30 people that are there with the same mindset and intention. No, exactly. I'm not worried. Not really.
No worries at all. This place you could be.
Yeah, not really. I'm usually with my gang of people. Bomb. This was a great conversation. I think I want to have a few others with you later on, specific to training and gear, and also some of the things that are happening culturally around firearms. I think both New York and California, in a lot of ways, are at a weird extreme when it comes to the firearms legislation and laws in this country. They're at these, like Texas in the middle, and these extremes at the
on the two ends.
Yeah, it's like a weird gun law sandwich. And in a lot of ways, I think there's a lot of conversations happening around some of these places that should be had at a wider scale and audience. And I hope to have you back on, Mom.
Although, actually, I want to come and visit. So that next one I'll do in person.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. There's some good tacos down here. We were just finishing up some recordings in Mexico, and we're about to go to SHOT Show, which is
I will see you there.
Oh,
when you get?
I think I'm at Range Day on Monday. Which is nice. You know, again, people don't realize this about me, man. I grew up around all of these things, and guns and everything like that are great, but for me, they were just. So I don't get that excited around Range Day. I do get excited about meeting all these people that have vast amounts of knowledge and experiences that I meet there. I mean, I talked to the South African tracker last time I was there. We spent like 2 hours talking about weird aspects of human tracking and stuff like that. It was fascinating. And just the amount of people you get to meet there and backgrounds and handle all these cool guns, you know.
I'm digging it.
So hopefully I'll see you out there, Bob.
Yeah, I'll hit you when I get into town, and we'll hang out.
Awesome.
Get some good food. I'm all about food. Let's get some good food.
Yeah. You definitely are all about good food. I think the dinner you took me on is on my top five list of the past decade. So enjoy that.
You know what? Before I let you go, I leave, I got a funny story. So we're having dinner together at that Italian restaurant, and two guys at the bar spot you.
Yeah.
And I could see them trying to get the courage off the table. And I'm looking at them. I'm like, no.
Dude.
And they're like, they're going back and forth. And I don't know. I was just like, you know, it was hysterical.
Okay. I was like, if this is the moment, yeah, I go, cool. I'm eating the best Italian food ever. Like, I was so wrong in all the other places I've had. So it was a great spot, man. Thank you for that memory.
Thank you so much, man. I appreciate this too. This is great. Looking forward to see you at SHOT Show. And I think you're coming to Trinity in May. I was talking to Eddie about.
Yeah, we're working that out. We're trying to get those seats filled. So like, if people are looking at this and they want to check this out.
Yep.
That's our home out there at Trinity. So, like, definitely check us out. Bob, it was a pleasure. I am going to go pack my ear pros and shit like that and all the stuff that I need to take to this weird-ass event. and hopefully I see you out there. Trinity Training Complex for all you guys out there. They're keeping the fires lit. So definitely check them out.
Thank you, Ed. Right, I appreciate you, man. Be good, brother.